This is Geeks Unleashed, episode 5. Hello, welcome to Geeks Unleashed, episode 5. I'm Mark.
And I'm Jasmine.
Each week, we cover the news of the week, and we also pick a couple of things to review that caught our fancy in the world of TV, comics, movies, and games. This week, our reviews are Japan Sinks and The Old Guard, both on Netflix.
And spoiler warning, this is a review show, so if you haven't had a chance to watch what we're talking about, you might want to pause this and come back and give us a listen afterward. Oh, and also at the, you know, toward the end, we give you a couple of recommendations on some other things that we may or may not like.
So, Jasmine, another corona-filled week. but also over here, the heat has started to return. The last few weeks we've been locked in and raining and cold, so it's actually been nice. The sun's come out. I've actually today got a cold one out. I'm having to drink a nice cold drink while we're doing this podcast because it is extremely hot today. Have you been up to much this week?
Not too much this week. I forgot that Ubisoft was doing their conference. I think it's called Ubisoft Forward, where they're premiering a bunch of gameplay and new games that they've got coming up for the next year or so. Caught the first half of it, and they were talking about Watch Dogs, which I've downloaded the first game of Watch Dogs, and I never really got too far in it. It seemed really fun, but it also seemed a bit kind of complicated. So I think I was not patient enough when I was playing it the first time. But right now they're talking about their third installment in the Watch Dog kind of world. But what looked really interesting about it was you can literally recruit anyone off the street. So while you're playing the game, you can walk up to the cab driver and recruit him to your cause, or you can walk up to a guard and recruit them from working from the bad guy to being part of the resistance to be part of your cause too. And then you can play as any of the characters that you have recruited. So like the load screen that they were showing showed like 20 characters, and all of those characters are people that you randomly recruited while you're walking around London. And you can literally play as like an 80-year-old grandma that carries a little handgun in her purse. I've never seen anything like that where you can literally, like, everybody is fair game, kind of.
That's quite unique.
Yeah, so that concept seemed really interesting. Like, I'm probably, like, I haven't played Watch Dogs 2, so I wouldn't jump out and get this third game, but that, what they showed during the Ubisoft Forward, that looked really, really cool, and I don't know that I've seen anything like that.
I've this week actually been just doing a lot of reading. I've been trying to catch up on Detective Comics. I've sort of read, I read from issue 980 up to about issue 1001 or 2, which I actually was reading some of it today. Just really keen to catch up on Detective and Batman. I'm both behind on both because the Joker War is on its way. It's not that far away, and I really want to just be on top of that for when the Joker War comes out. Like, the Joker War looks really cool. So I've just been doing a lot of reading. So yeah, it's been good. It's been good to try and do a bit more reading. So, and the other thing, actually, I finished off season 3 of Westworld. So if you've not watched Westworld, it's a really amazing show. It's so beautifully done in terms of how it's put together, from fight scenes to the CGI, the special effects, it's really well done. You can see why they don't have long seasons, because they spend a lot in almost each episode feels like a small film. So, and Aaron Paul was a great addition to season 3. I mean, I love Aaron Paul from Breaking Bad. Obviously, everybody does. But I really liked him in Need for Speed as well.
Oh my God. That's my guilty pleasure movie.
I love that Need for Speed film. I thought it was a really good film.
It is so fun. It's so fun.
It starts off quite slow, but it gets, yeah. No, it's very different to your usual type of car film. So they spend a lot of time building up the characters, which was quite nice, before you have really, once they do get going, it's just a whole film of him driving the car. So actually it was quite good to have a bit before that.
Yeah, I thought it was one of the better video game movies.
Yeah, there's, yeah, it's a struggle with a video game movie, to be honest. but yeah, no, it was well, anyway, Westworld, it was brilliant. So it was really good. Like, and it's unfortunate, I don't know how long we have to wait for season four to come out, because they do have big gaps between each season. So I swear that show's been going on for about 5 years or something now.
Yeah, it feels like it. I mean, I've seen a couple of episodes from the first season, but I've never actually sat down and watched everything all the way through. But I've only ever heard good things about it.
Yeah. So that's been me this week. So let's move on to news of the week.
All right. So a couple of episodes ago, we talked about how Ruby Rose kind of abruptly left Batwoman on the CW. And at the time, they hadn't recast the part. Well, DC and CW were saying that they weren't going to recast Kate Kane, that they were going to bring in a whole new character. And they finally have announced who that character is going to be. The character's name is Ryan Wilder, and she'll be played by Javicia Leslie, which is kind of exciting because we're going to have a Black female lead character on one of the CW shows, which is great. I mean, we have an entire, almost entirely Black cast with the Black Lightning show. You know, not too much known about this character, new character coming in. She's kind of, the description made it kind of seem like she's had a hard knock life and she's trying to get it together, but she's good at heart. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays into what they've already set up in the first season. So I'm going to have to go back and start at the very beginning, and I'm going to have to go back and watch like the whole first season of Batwoman so that I can be ready to see what has changed and what updates they do have in season two. Because this, I've never heard of a show where your lead character disappears and then you just get rid of them completely and come up with a whole new character. So very interesting to see how they take that.
I think like I said a couple of weeks ago, we did discuss this previously. The only one we could think of was the Lethal Weapon TV show, where they did something similar, but they kept the majority of the cast. So
right.
I think we'll have to wait and see how that plays out. Yeah, like you said, there wasn't too much revealed about Ryan Wilder's character. I don't know much about the actress. I know that she's been on the recently cancelled Godfriended Me comedy drama, which I haven't watched, but I'm actually inclined to watch it, because when I was prepping for this, I went and watched the trailer for Godfriended Me.
Yeah.
And it does look like a really nice show.
It's kind of cute. I've seen a couple of episodes. Normally, like, the sitcom type of feel is not my jam. Like, I really kind of prefer, like, drama or sci-fi. I don't know. Like, a long time ago, there was a show called Eli Stone with, oh, God. The guy who's on Elementary was playing Sherlock. Why can't I think of his name? Anyway, the show was about this lawyer who has some kind of tumor, but the tumor gives him like all of this kind of supernatural ability, or like he hallucinates a lot. So it's kind of like a musical show. But the Godfriended Me kind of gives me those Eli Stone vibes. Really cute, really light. It's a pretty enjoyable kind of series.
Yeah, no, I would quite like to pick up and watch a couple of episodes just to prepare myself for sort of to see the differences in the actress and just to be ready for it. And like you said about Batwoman, I gave up on Batwoman in the end. Ruby Rose.
Only one. I know a lot of people kind of gave up after that halfway point in the season.
I wanted to watch it once, see what it was like. I didn't really like it straight away, if I'm honest. Ruby Rose is not a great actress, and I have to put my hands up and say the writing was awful. Just everything about the show was bad. It felt cheesy. It was a show that was on one hand trying to say, well, we don't need men and we don't need Batman and, you know, all this kind of thing. Yet, you know, he was referenced so much, and, you know, there was one line about, oh, something about Batman's costume, it's not great until it's made for a woman. It's like, you know.
At that point, you're trying too hard, guys.
Yeah, like, I just, you know, we the comics world, we know that Batwoman is Batman's cousin. You know, it's fine. Like, you know, they're related, you know, and you know, if you read the character, you know, if you read the comics with Batwoman in, she's a strong character that doesn't need Batman. She, and in fact, they are polar opposites in terms of character. She's very strong, aggressive, willing to cross the line, which he has done several times. And she's a just a really strong, outstanding character. And I just wasn't getting that from Ruby Rose. She just didn't come across that strong.
She is a bit flat, unfortunately.
So I've changed my mind a little bit. I'm kind of now thinking this could be good with the leaving of Ruby Rose, but I'm still not that keen on seeing the character of Kate Kane go. So I'm really hoping that they can make this good, because I did like the fact that this was Batman's cousin. So, I mean, eventually Batman's going to come into it. Whether that's 5 years from now, I'm sure they will, you know, they're going to bring Batman into it. They have to. Even if it's just him coming in as Bruce Wayne or something, which in some ways they have already cast Bruce Wayne, because they're going to have Hush in it. And obviously, for those who know anything about that, Hush is obviously going to make himself look like Bruce Wayne, who's one of Batman's main villains. Obviously a newer villain from the last 10 years of comics, but I think that's going to be quite good to see how that goes. So I don't know, I'm excited to see the new direction, hopefully some better acting, and and hopefully followed with better writing.
the more important part.
The other thing though that kind of jumps out at me is, if you think Ruby Rose's character didn't really interact too much with Gotham, the Gotham Police Department, she interacted more with her father's specialist elite team, the Crows. Mm-hmm. So it would be interesting to see, actually, Ryan Welder, obviously as a black actor, interacting in Gotham with the police department, especially with everything that's going on right now. We'd be keen to see if the CW would be risking to cover those subjects. So I'd quite like to see that.
That would be interesting when you put it that way.
Yeah. Whether they're brave enough to cover those topics, I don't know. But I'd quite like to see them be brave. So
we'll see. I'm not going to hold my breath on that, but we'll see.
yeah. Okay, the next piece of news. The King in Black is Marvel's next event, which follows Empire, which we've discussed a couple of times on this show. Marvel announced only, within the last 48 hours, that their next big event coming out in December is a miniseries, The King of King in Black, which is a character called Null. He is the god of symbiotes. He is coming to the Marvel Universe. Well, he's coming to Earth, specifically. So when I say the god of symbiotes, he is the god of symbiotes, which include well-known symbiotes like Venom and Carnage. And that miniseries is going to be written by Donny Cates and and illustrated by Ryan Stegman, who have done Venom and Absolute Carnage together. So I'm really excited about that. I think Donny Cates is a great writer. I've read Baby Teeth, and I've obviously read Venom as well. What's really exciting is that this is going to incorporate the Avengers, Spider-Man, everybody. This is going to be a big event. They think, the way Donny Cates was describing it in the little video that he put out on Marvel Universe, he was so excited, saying, you know, they think they know what's coming, but they don't know what's coming. This is, it sounds like it's going to be a massive event. And listening to how excited Donnie was, I was excited. I was like, yes. I was like, this is going to be a good Christmas present. Thank you. So,
yeah, I'm surprised they announced it so early, because the event's starting in December. I don't really keep up with too many of the like Marvel comics as they're coming out. But the idea that there's someone in the universe worse than Thanos is kind of intriguing. So I'm super interested to see what this turns into.
What I would love, because you just highlighted the worse than Thanos thing, it would be great to see Marvel and Sony just say, look, let's just work together. I've got opinions on how Sony run their Marvel characters. But anyway, it would be so good to see. This looks like it's going to be amazing, and I'm sure it is, because I've got a lot of faith in Donny Cates, but this would be something that I would love to see in a movie setting. like, you know, if Sony and Marvel could just get it together and get a big movie event with Venom, Carnage, Spider-Man, the Avengers, I'd be all over that.
I mean, I really liked Tom Hardy in Venom. I did not think Venom was a good movie, but I enjoyed it all the same. So I thought it was highly entertaining. But I still want to see more of that universe. Like you said, I what they have now is so much better than Topher Grace as Eddie Brock from Spider-Man.
Yeah, 30. Yeah, yeah.
So I would love to see this continue and expand into the bigger Marvel universe.
I think you're right there. Tom Hardy was not... Sorry, Tom Hardy was a good Venom, and he's a good actor anyway. The Venom movie was not good.
Not at all. But again, like, it was fun, and I can admit to enjoying bad movies from time to time.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, we've all watched a bad film. I think what made it good was me and two of my mates went for a couple of beers, then we went to the cinema and watched Venom. Maybe that helped.
Yeah, I was gonna. That's a perfect way to watch that kind of movie.
I think probably it says a lot that I've not watched it since. There's a lot of Marvel, and comic book movies that I've rewatched, and even DC. I've rewatched plenty of DC movies. I've watched even Batman versus Superman, which I wouldn't say is brilliant. I've watched that two or three times. I actually do enjoy that film. Even Justice League I've watched twice, maybe three times, but like Venom I've not rewatched at all. So, but yeah, just exciting to see that Marvel are lining up their next event, and I'm really excited about The King in Black.
Back to the DC for this next piece. So Friday, not only do we have all of this news coming out about the Batman movie with Robert Pattinson, but now HBO has announced that they're going to be doing a spinoff series from the movie about Gotham PD, same screenwriter as the film, who is Terrence Winter. Other credits of his include Boardwalk Empire and Sopranos, so he's no stranger to doing stuff for HBO. I think this is a bold move for DC, because for so long they tried so hard to keep their movie world and their TV world separate. So the fact that now we have a connection, I mean, yes, in Flashpoint, we did see Ezra Miller and Grant Gustin together as Flash, but that was just sort of like a crumb. But for the most part, everything had remained so separate. And I want to know why now, like why now are they combining and making like a massive shared universe? And also, B, like, why do we have to have a show about cops?
So I think probably when you say why now, that's got to be HBO Max wants to have exclusive content to get people to pay for that. So what better than to do something comic-based, which they know already has a fan base? HBO Max is just another thing, you know, wanting our money. I mean, and obviously I'm not in America, so I don't have access to HBO Max, but obviously, you know, they've got a big American fan base there, and then, you know, they can also make their money up by licensing that if they don't want to bring out HBO Max across the world. But I think that could be why now. But it also feels to me a little bit like maybe they're embracing what they said about the DC extended universe. Maybe they're trying to embrace, I mean, this is just hypothetical, how I've been trying to analyze this is DC embracing the fact that they have got a multiverse, you know, like, so, you know, they've obviously got Robert Pattinson's film, which I think I've read that that's going to be separate from what they've got going on with Wonder Woman and Aquaman and the sort of the Justice League that was under Zack Snyder until recently. You know, so this TV series will be tied into Robert Pattinson's. So it kind of feels to me like maybe, although you've got Wonder Woman and The Flash and all that, in that little movie bubble there, that's kind of like one Earth. And then you've got Robert Pattinson's Batman film and this TV show, almost another Earth. Then you've got the CW ones on another Earth and so on. And then, but if they want to, because they've created the Infinite Crisis, if they want to cross them over somehow, they can. That's kind of how I've interpreted. That's just how I've interpreted this, because they call this the DC Extended Universe. Yeah. Although I do feel that they probably will leave Robert Pattinson's one alone. I'm getting the feeling that it's going to be a little bit more serious. So they might not want to probably have crossovers too much with that. And because of its, like you say, Terrence Winter on the writing credits there with Sopranos and Boardwalk Empire, this Gotham series is rumored to be a prequel to Batman to show how the city became corrupt. I can't see them playing too much on the villains and the sort of the spandex. It could actually just be an actual crime TV show in Gotham, but with Easter eggs thrown in. I mean, that's just how I'm interpreting how we've...
But how are they going to make it too different from the Gotham series that was on Fox is what I want to know.
So I think that got ruined, in my opinion, by too many people stepping in. So it was meant to be initially just following Commissioner Gordon. And like you say, following his, it was almost like it was meant to be an origin TV show for him. But then people just seemed to be muddling in with it. And then they wanted to have more of an origin on Bruce Wayne. And then there was constant supervillains brought in that were brought in way too early, because they didn't come in, I guess, following the comics, they weren't brought in until Bruce was obviously an adult. And there was obviously a lot of the villains were, I don't know, the Gotham TV show just
it got messy.
It got really messy. I gave up with it after a while.
But part of me wonders, like, how much of that is the fans' fault? Like, I feel like people have put Batman into this box, into this, like, time period box, right? Everyone wants to see adult Batman, like, in his prime. And there's just so many other stories that they can tell that are part of the Batman universe. And I don't know why we have to be stuck on this one time period in Bruce Wayne's life. Like, if they were going to do a spinoff series, granted, now it's hard to get excited about the spinoff series because we haven't seen the Pattinson movie yet.
Yeah.
But like, what about the We Are Robin comic arc? Like that whole series introduced all of these fun and new and interesting characters. Like, there's so much diversity of character in Gotham. I don't know why we have to do everything about
Batman. Yeah.
Batman.
No, you're right. This, I mean, I love, I think it came out late 90s, the Nightwing comic, so Nightwing decided to move to a city up the road from Gotham called Bloodhaven. And about the first 100 issues or so, Nightwing was in Bloodhaven, and it was really cool watching Dick Grayson move there, training to be a policeman, became Night, so he was always Nightwing, but then he took a sidekick on himself called Tarantula, and she turned out to be, well, didn't turn out, she was always a little bit edgy, I would love a Nightwing TV show. I know Nightwing at the moment's doing wonderful things in the Titans TV show, so that's probably why they won't do that, but actually that Titans show is brilliant anyway. But yeah, just to give an example of the fact that there's many ways they could go down, even like a really good Birds of Prey TV show. I know they tried Birds of Prey before, but
but they really haven't done Birds of Prey since, what, the early 2000s with Jessica Alba?
Was it Birds of Prey? It was on WB, wasn't it? It got cancelled after one season.
Oh, right.
I'm thinking of Dark Angel. Yeah. No, that's okay. I can't remember who was in that Birds of Prey TV show, but it lasted like 12 episodes, and it was on Warner Brothers before that became CW.
I mean, the CW has a whole trove of people they can put on that show now from the Arrowverse. So, like, it's a prime time to have a Birds of Prey show.
They are waiting for news about the...
The Canaries?
The Canaries, sorry. I know that's not Birds of Prey, but like that's one I feel could be very similar to Birds of Prey.
Yeah.
Birds of Prey would be brilliant. But yeah, like this, like you say, Batman and the whole Gotham world, there's so much that they could pull from. But it does seem to be that whenever they come up with a TV show or film, it's centred around Batman and Gotham.
Yeah.
So... Batwoman, actually, to be honest, was actually a good way to go. I was quite excited when I first heard about Batwoman.
Only other thing I'm excited about with this show is Jeffrey Wright, who plays Commissioner Gordon in the film, is going to be reprising his role. And I love Jeffrey Wright. He's been in Westworld. He's done a couple of Bond films. He's the sort of CIA counterpart to James Bond in the new films. So I'd be excited to see Jeffrey Wright anytime on TV, But as far as being excited about the show overall, it's hard to be excited without having seen what this world already looks like from the movie. So
yeah,
sort of like I'm wait and see.
No, to be honest, I'm going to watch the film and I'm going to watch the show. So I can't say I'm going to watch every episode from the show, but I'm going to see what it's like. At the moment we are in some sort of, I feel like the last few years, it's been a sort of a comics renaissance at the moment.
Definitely.
Comics has very much been embraced by media, which is great to see. So, I'm going to give it a go. So let's move on to our first review.
There are people tweeting that the Japanese islands have tilted toward the Pacific.
There are similar tweets here. It says that Japan sank around Ibaraki.
What? Japan is sinking?
Do you want to kick us off?
Oh, man. Okay, so this first review, it's a new anime series premiering on Netflix. It's a Netflix original. It's called Japan Sinks. It is from the same studio that did Devilman Crybaby, which I tried to watch that series, could not get through it. But Japan Sinks, it has a very sort of old school anime vibe to me. The characters are drawn in sort of like the 90s style. Their features are a lot less prominent. All the edges are a little bit softer. The colors are a little bit more muted. It kind of reminded me of an anime series called Banana Fish, which I just finished. Banana Fish was based on a manga that was from the 80s and it got turned into an anime in about 2018, I think it was. But beautiful intro, loved the colors. Oh, but man, this show is stressful. Like, stressful. Huge spoilers coming up. We only watched the first three episodes so far. I know for a fact, as soon as I'm done with this, I'm probably going to go finish the series because I have to know what happens. But within the first three episodes, we have a guy getting blown up by a hidden landmine. We've got a girl who dies because she got stuck in poison gas. I mean, it's insane. Like, people are falling out of helicopters and dead bodies are falling from the sky. It's insane. So much happens in the first three episodes of the show.
I rewatched the first episode. I watched the first episode twice just because I felt like I missed stuff. So the first episode I felt was quite slow initially.
Yeah.
But then I think I missed things. Like, I didn't realize. So this show centers mainly around a family, a mother and father, an older sort of teenage daughter and a young son. And the first episode, they're all in separate locations before they come together at the end of the first episode. And then you obviously will follow that family as well as other people associated with that family throughout the show.
Yeah.
I felt like the first episode was, I know it's devastating about the earthquakes, but I felt like it was quite nice watching the family get together at the end of that first episode. I felt like that was quite a nice moment that happened, and how they did it too, obviously with the lights that were laid out and things like that. So it was nice to see that happen. And then, like you say, from there
all hell breaks loose.
So that's why, like, rewatching it in a way, it was quite nice. So I saw the mum actually on the plane land at the very beginning of the episode, and then obviously we don't see her again until towards the end of the first episode where she comes back. So she's almost like, it feels to me like more of a minor character in the first episode,
right?
And then she does become more prominent in the second and third episode. But yeah, it didn't seem to be a show that was afraid to pull its punches. And just as well, the other thing about anime is it's anime can be all ages. It can be aimed at children as well as adults. This is definitely a show not for children.
And when those bodies started falling from the sky, I was like, holy crap, I was not expecting.
So I think until that point, it felt like you could have a child watch it with you.
Yes.
Because it was quite, although there was an earthquake, which may scare some children, there was nothing I felt fairly horrific in that. And then, like, I was sitting there and suddenly this body lands right there in front of the whole family. And
yeah,
everything.
Exactly.
You're like, I was like, whoa.
Yeah. Like I was the exact same way. I mean, I'm sitting here and you can feel the tension. Like the first episode does an amazing job of building that kind of fear that comes with disaster movies. But just out of nowhere, it's a very calm moment. Everybody is finally like resting and relaxing, and this little group of survivors have come together, and then just out of nowhere, literal bodies start falling out of the sky, and everybody is just like, what the hell is going on right now?
So I think at the end, there's about 20-ish survivors all grouped together at the top of this.
Yeah.
It's more than a hill. It's
a temple at the very top.
Yeah. It's got to be, you know, a couple of miles above normal housing, and like a little temple, and it's quite a nice little area they've all got together. And you kind of feel like, so the first episode, it obviously kicks off a bit slow. You're slowly seeing everybody in different locations. Then the earthquake happens. Then you sort of follow them around a little bit before they regroup at the top. And like you say, there's this moment of calm before we go into, obviously, we've watched the next two episodes.
Yeah.
And I'm very much of the opinion of you that I'm hooked. So this isn't, so me and you are very different in terms of our anime knowledge. You've watched a lot more than I have. During Corona, haven't you watched something like 25, 30 shows? Or
I'm
like
up
that?
To 38 now.
Oh, wow. I do you know what? I've never watched an anime show at all. This is my first anime show. I've watched anime movies, and, you know, it's the stereotypical ones. I've watched Studio Ghibli, and that's pretty much it. So watching this style of show was something I would never normally have thought to watch, but I'm actually enjoying this. I didn't think it would be as enjoyable for me as I thought it would. And I kept watching it thinking, I know this is a stupid thing to think, but I kept thinking it going, this should be a great TV show. This would be a great TV show. But I meant more like a live action. Live action. But it felt like watching a live action show in some ways, because I did feel of the characters, mainly the teenage girl whose name I forget, like she
Ayumu.
She's the one who you kind of get to know a little bit more, and she's very teenage, I think, actually quite selfish in some ways.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And she admits it fairly early on, where she actually abandoned a load of her friends at the start of the earthquake. But then obviously later on, I think it's quite obvious how she, one of the boys that's in her group, she, you know, survivors, she obviously quite likes him. And then finds a way to split off another girl away from him, which unfortunately results in her death. So, you know, seeing the sort of several of the things that she does, you know, teenagers don't necessarily always think through their best actions. So, so I thought that was actually playing true to what teenagers can be like. So, you know, I remember being a teenager, you don't always think about everybody else. So,
with the part where it starts off, she's on a track team and they're practicing in a stadium. I can kind of understand her leaving her team, just because if she's so panicked and she knows that her brother is home alone and her mom is not home, because her mom is not even in the country at the moment. I can understand the panic she would have about trying to get to her family. But the one thing that I couldn't get behind is within the first three episodes, like this, maybe it's just a time skip that I'm not realizing is happening, but like the pacing seems very off with the way that they're handling things. Like in the second episode, they make it to this other part. The father is like digging around to try to find yams, but it turns out a lot of landmines or unexploded bombs from World War II have been unearthed, and he unfortunately stumbles upon one and literally like he blows himself up. And it's just like, so we have the scene of his hand flying over like to the dinner table where everybody else is, and then it cuts away, and the next thing they're all walking on this road. And I'm like, how are we all just having a normal conversation after your father just got blown up? I don't understand.
I kind of probably put in some forgiveness there, because like you say, if this probably had been live action, so each episode is 25 minutes long and we've only got 10 episodes.
Yeah.
So if this was live action, we would, you know, that a big death like the father dying, that when that happened, I was like, oh wow. I was like, that really, that hit me. I was like,
oh yeah,
what?
Me too.
Like, sure. I actually skipped back to rewatch that scene. I skipped back 2 minutes to rewatch that whole scene. I was like, no, they didn't just kill the dad.
Yeah, but exactly. In my head, I was trying to rationalize it. I was like, maybe he crawled out of the hole in time, or like, I'm making all these excuses. And then the hand comes flying, and I was like, okay, guess not.
Because the dad had started to become the main focus of the show. Although the
right.
daughter,
like, he was
although
the leader of the group.
Yeah. So he'd started to take over like a leadership role, and he'd started to. I kept comparing this to Walking Dead. I know there's no zombies, but I kept comparing it to Walking Dead.
Oh no, it does remind me of that for sure.
Yeah, he started to take over like a bit like a nice guy role, but like a bit like a Rick type role in Survival Instincts, and a bit, and I guess a bit of Daryl in there. You know, he killed an animal and cooked it for them, and I thought, you know what, like if the end of the world happened now, I would have no idea how to catch an animal and kill it and cook it. Maybe I need to go and learn how to do these things. but he instantly took over. And again, when you say about the time jumps and stuff, we didn't know enough about him and was he like a weekend hunter? Because we know he was some sort of builder. We saw at the beginning him doing scaffolding.
Right. And the daughter mentioned something about survival skills, but like, why would he have had those? Was he in the military? Like, what is the story? Maybe they explained it in the rest of the series, but yeah.
Yeah, maybe down the road they might go into his character, but... yeah, when they killed him off, I was like, oh wow, you guys are not afraid to do anything now. You know, you've just killed off the dad. Yeah. So then obviously you just saw it actually starting to become more of a female-led show.
Yeah.
So the mum starts to take over as the leadership role, and actually you start to see the dynamic between this selfish... I do think there was moments of her being selfish, teenage daughter and the mum.
Yeah.
And they did have a bit of a blowout after the dad's death, actually, like you just said on that walk. Yeah. And I think playing into what you said about the time jump thing, because we've only got 25 minutes in each episode and there's only 10 episodes, I think they have had to skip moments.
Maybe there's a day or so in between, but it was just watching it in, I guess, real time. It was just such an abrupt, like, okay, he's dead, let's keep going. And it was just kind of jarring to see everybody just pick up and move on. But I'm hoping they explain it, but there has to be something that happened between the mom and the rest of the family, because the way that her and her daughter are fighting, like it lends itself to, they have a you know, like there's some skeletons in this family closet. So I'm really hoping we get to explore that a little bit more.
Yeah, definitely. And then the third episode.
Oh man!
The third episode caught me a little bit off guard. So again, this reminded me of Walking Dead, and actually,
it reminded me a lot of Fear the Walking Dead.
Like, I was literally about to say Fear, because again, centering on the family. But it's things like, because now they've lost their leader who had the survival skills, obviously, like been able to cook animals from the wild. Now they're having to do things like raiding supermarkets. So it caught me off guard that they're one of the survivors that they brought with them. So obviously it centers on this family, but they had about three other survivors with them, three or four other survivors that sort of coming with them. And then one of the male survivors obviously tries to sexually assault one of the other female survivors, not in the family, another female survivor that's with them.
Yeah, it was a truck driver that picked him up on that road.
Yeah. And then I was like, oh, wow, like this is just out. You know, like, I just couldn't believe it. And I was like, oh, man, I'm so glad my children aren't sitting in the room while this is all going on.
You know, it was at that point during that episode where I actually went back to, like, the main screen of Netflix and found that the show actually has a TVMA rating for violence. And I was like, I did not realize before this started that it was a TVMA. But, yeah, like, it just, the hits just keep coming. It's like every time you think they get a break, it's like, nope, just kidding. Now some more dramatic things are about to happen to these people.
What I was going to say is on, I think it might be a 15 over here. I haven't checked. I can't remember, but I do remember seeing on Netflix, and the warning comes up. It said things like sexual violence, whatever. At the top bar on Netflix, it does describe the show in terms of like warnings. So it's a show that you can't watch children with, and if you've obviously got any. Well, nobody enjoys rape or sexual assault, but like if you obviously are someone who can't be near that subject, obviously stay away from it. But, you know, they obviously move on from that. And then to see what happens then later on to that character, I was like, oh, man.
I know, what a waste, right? Like she went through that, she beat the crap out of that guy, and then she dies trying to pee. Like, I mean, just, what is happening with the show? Then they get to the supermarket and it's like, oh, okay, finally a supermarket and the power is still on and maybe they can reload. And then there's some psycho dude in the supermarket shooting at them with a bow and arrow. And I'm just like, oh my God, these people cannot catch a break.
Oh, and then the way that episode ends.
Like, oh my God.
Oh, that was like cliffhanger moment.
Yeah.
I mean, like, yeah. I'll tell you what, let's not say who it was so you can enjoy the cliffhanger. But one of them gets shot with an arrow and then the titles come up. I was like, when the titles come up, I was like, no, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah, exactly.
I was actually really getting into the show.
Me too.
100%. I was into the show. I think what you said about the art, it was very simplistic. The other thing I did notice about the show, and especially during the big earthquake scenes, was a lot of the background characters don't seem to move or move very slowly.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a little bit jarring. But then the main characters are very animated and screaming and things like that. So I was a bit like, well, the guys back there are going to run? Like, you know, they're not moving. But it was very simplistic, and didn't use any of that sort of computer CGI stuff that they sometimes shove into animated films and TV shows. It was a pure anime TV show.
Yeah.
I liked the art. I thought it was, like I say, simplistic, but still very enjoyable to watch. What I liked was actually the intro and the music that accompanied each episode. It kind of almost felt like polar opposite to the tone.
It lulled me into like this false sense of, okay, this is going to be one of those kind of like emotional series. But I was thinking like maybe sad emotional. And this series is so far, it's very like, rip your heart out of your chest. Like everything is running at, you know, 90 miles an hour. I mean, it's moving so fast, it's happening so fast, and no one is safe. It's like you said, like, nobody seems to be safe from getting the axe at any moment.
What I would say is actually with the shows, you know, if you're listening to us talk about it, forget about it being an anime film or TV show. Sorry. If you've not watched anime before and anime is not your thing, honestly, just watch this and I think you would end up being hooked. Like I would say, I'm gonna finish this off 100%. I want to see the outcome here. I'm hoping this family can actually make it out.
I know, right? please, for the love of God.
Yeah. But actually, you know, sorry, one last thing I thought was really interesting was that so this story is based off of a book from 1973. So they obviously put in some modernization to it.
Oh, yeah.
So the YouTuber that they run into. Yes. I was like, that's quite a cool touch, like putting in the YouTuber.
Yeah, that was another thing that I really enjoyed, like the updates. I mean, you've got the younger brother who they don't really say his age. I'm assuming he's probably like 8 or 9, maybe, if he's even that old.
Yeah, I thought about 7 or something. So maybe, like you say, 7, right? No, it could be around that area, yeah.
But, like, he's a gamer. And at one point, when they're trying to figure out, like, okay, we got off this little mountain. We know that the water is rising. We have to do something. Do we go east or west? This kid, this very young kid, had the wherewithal to get on a phone and reach out to his gaming buddies. And one of his gaming buddies is in Estonia. And ask them to look up satellite footage and help them navigate where to go while they're in Japan. because they can't rely on local media.
Yeah, but I thought that was quite good, because they were saying about local media, you can't mm-hmm. rely on the news. Right. And actually, I've seen that recently where I follow a local newspaper on Twitter. I follow one of the journalists on Twitter, and she put out a tweet recently about Corona, about the sort of the town that I live in, saying, look, the bigger news has reported incorrect figures, and I can't remember the numbers now, but she said, like, oh, today's issue of the Daily, whatever, I won't say what they were, but the bigger newspaper had reported 30 cases in the local town where I work. And she said, I just want to confirm everyone that's not true, that there's only been 2 cases. This is very much a case of everybody jumping on the big newspaper world rather than actually just checking their facts. So I thought that was quite interesting about what you said about the boy. Mm-hmm. And then actually putting that into the TV show, you can't necessarily rely on media. Yeah. So yeah, he goes onto his gaming device and actually gets one of his buddies to tell them what they should do. And then they decided to follow them. And that's actually where the group, because they're in a larger group and they split up.
Right,
and
they split becomes, up.
Yeah, they go, that's a smaller group. So the family decide to take faith in that rather than the large group to follow the media. So that's actually, you know, very much a case of even things that happen now, sheep following the media rather than people using their own minds to do their own research.
Right. So, and part of the problem was because of the damage that the earthquake had caused, like they couldn't get as much local information as they wanted. So that's part of the reason, but also like they do, like there is a scene in the first episode where you can hear a lot of people mumbling in this little survivors group about misinformation and fake news and all of this kind of stuff. And even some people are like, no, this is a conspiracy. This can't really be real. What's happening online. It's they're lying to us. So I feel like them updating a story from 1973 to include these kinds of elements makes it A, that much more stressful, and B, like that much more interesting to watch, because it sucks you in so much that you're just sitting there and you're literally on the edge of your seat. Like Mark was saying, we got to the point in the superstore or the convenience store where the person gets shot with the arrow, and all of a sudden I'm like falling out of my chair to try to get to my mouse to hurry up and like pause the episode so I don't ruin it before the podcast.
I remember like when we were chatting about this before, when we were on WhatsApp, and you were like, I hadn't watched it, and you were like, are we going past 3 or are we only doing 3? I was like, yeah. It's up to you. What do you want to do? And you're like, oh, this show's so stressful. And I was like, okay, should we just stick at 3 for now? And like when I saw the end of episode 3, I was like, oh, wow. I was like,
I was asking, like, because if you're like, we can do the whole thing, then I would have just finished and watched the whole thing. But I was like, this is a perfect cliffhanger to kind of leave it on.
Yeah, no, definitely. So anyway, let's sort of wrap it up there about
anyway, Japan. This one gets definitely 2 thumbs up. Definitely want to finish it. Definitely want to see where this goes. Very, very good series so far.
Yeah, no, I would say, I'm wrapping this up. Japan sinks. I'm very much eager to complete this and see if they can get off before it sinks. So I don't know if it actually does sink, but or if the whole island eventually sinks or not. But no, it's good. I really enjoyed it. I'll keep going. And if you are on the fence about anime, just try it. Make yourself go through those first 3 episodes and then tell me what you think. So, right. Our next review is also on Netflix, which came out this weekend. On Friday, they released a movie, The Old Guard, which is based off of Greg Rucker and Leonardo Fernandez graphic novel. I think they've got a couple of graphic novels of The Old Guard. So Greg Rucker is quite well known for writing Wonder Woman and Black Magic, and illustrated by Leonardo Fernandez, who's done things like Deadpool and Punisher Max. This movie's been directed by Gina Prince by the Wood?
Blythewood,
yeah. It also stars some really well-known people, as well as somebody new to me as well. Obviously, everybody must know Charlie Theron, who's been in the latest 2 Fast and Furious and Prometheus and loads of things. It also introduced somebody new to me, a new actress, Kiki Layne, who I actually had looked up, is going to be in the sequel to Coming to America. So I'm quite excited actually about Coming to America, to be honest. I love that film. It's great. And also a name that I probably will struggle to say, Chiwetel Ejiofor, from 12 Years a Slave and various things.
Ejiofor has been in a bunch of stuff. He's great, though.
I saw him in theater years ago, actually. I can't remember what it was now, but it was something Shakespearean.
Oh, man. He was in the movie version of Kinky Boots, and he was so good in that role. He was so great.
I think he's a fantastic actor, and when I saw him in this, I was like, good, like, you know, he's a good quality actor. But the one thing I didn't realize when I was looking up was the main villain, whose character is Merrick, is played by Harry Melling, who plays Dudley in Harry Potter.
Now, you know, you say that. No, me neither. And I kept looking at him and I was like, I hate this guy's face, and I don't know why, because I feel like I've never seen him before. But like, there was something the whole time I was watching the movie, I was like, why do I hate this guy so much that I've never seen him? But now I get it. Suddenly.
I watched it with my wife, and she kept going to me, that guy looks like someone from Harry Potter. And I didn't even look it up when I was watching it. And I was like, because I kept thinking, he doesn't look like someone from Harry Potter. Like, I wasn't sure. I didn't think he did. So I looked it up, and I was like, no way, that's Dudley. I was like, what happened? I was like, he used to obviously be this short little, well, I know obviously he was, you know, a kid, and like now he's quite tall, almost like a lanky adult, like, you know, what happened? So but anyway, it's a good cast, and, you know, strong cast, and obviously comes off some great source material. I have to be honest, I've not read the comic. I would read the comic now.
Yeah, I think I might have to go pick it up after this.
I knew this was gonna happen. They said it.
We did it right, Andy, for the right
and
reason.
What did it get us, Nikki? What? Nothing. We've done nothing. The world isn't getting any better. It's getting worse.
So to summarize this film in terms of plot, it follows, well, okay, so I'm going to spoil this. I didn't read the synopsis before the film. So what I enjoyed was the twist comes about 15 minutes into the film, which I didn't know. I didn't even watch the trailer. I just watched the film. So if you do want to watch this film and you're really, you know, I would say go watch it and come back. But it follows a group of immortals, which I didn't realize at all. So when they go, so the team of immortals is led by Charlize Theron's character, Andy. Mm-hmm. So Andy meets up with Chiwetel Ejiofor's character, who gives them a job. He's sort of acting on behalf of the CIA, gives them a job to go and hunt, find some girls that have been kidnapped in sort of the Middle East. But when they get there, they find out that they've been set up, and they get killed, and they resurrect themselves and then kill the team that killed them. But when they do that, they realize that they're in a room surrounded by cameras, mm-hmm. which, and I was like, the whole thing, I was like, no way. I was like, I did not know. Like, literally, I was like, when they got killed, like actually properly killed and were on the floor, I was like, no. I was like, what on earth? Like, I was really like, I was like really taken back. I said to my wife, that can't be right. I was like, these are the main characters. So I went, something must have happened. Maybe, you know, I was like, maybe they'll survive or whatever. And then I start seeing like the bullets like popping out of their faces and their foreheads. And
yeah.
And I was like, ah, okay. I was like, okay, there's some sort of immortal. Didn't know much more than that. And so then after that, couple of them get taken by obviously Merrick's character, and then the two that are left, they manage to seek out Kiki Layne's character and form a new team that goes to rescue the other half of the team that have been taken. And whilst we're doing that, we get to learn a little bit more about their backstory, and that there's another immortal out there as well, mm-hmm. who This was actually the bit I thought was almost the worst part about the film. Like, imagine being immortal and living at the bottom of the ocean for 500 years, I think they said.
Yeah, I think they said 500, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and she was obviously, she was thrown to the bottom of the ocean with an open mask. So there's just no way, there was no air. I mean, she literally would have kept dying and resurrecting. That was quite interesting. And they didn't show enough, in my opinion, of their past. It was more, it was sort of 90-95% in present,
right,
and about this particular mission to go and rescue their teammates. So I enjoyed the whole setup. For me, it really felt like a long TV pilot.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, it felt like the first couple of episodes of a new series. Like I loved the pacing, because even if you don't quite read anything beforehand, like when you go into it, you kind of know that there's something weird about this group before they get killed the first time. And it's just kind of like, now I want to know how have you guys stuck together all this time? Because we're talking, Charlize is the first, we're assuming, and the oldest, but she's got to be at least 3 millennia old, if not older. And it's interesting. And one of my favorite kind of tropes is when ancient weapons get combined with modern warfare. And one of the first places that kind of did that well, in my opinion, was Sleepy Hollow, the first season of Sleepy Hollow, when they introduced the Headless Horseman. Because it's like he rides into town, he's on a horse, and then he sees the police that have automatic weapons. And so he ditches his axe, and now he has an automatic weapon. So now you've got the Headless Horseman, the iconic Headless Horseman from Sleepy Hollow, is now running around town on a horse with a machine gun. And it's just kind of like, this is awesome. So like the first time they gear up to go into battle, Charlize has this battle axe kind of thing going. Nikki and Joe both have swords because they're old enough that they come from like the era of the Crusades. But they also have all these guns, and it's just, it's really interesting. And that first raid on the, when they're going to try to rescue those schoolgirls that were kidnapped, and I want to say it was South Sudan. Like, watching that whole raid scene play out felt like you're in a video game cutscene. Like, it really feels like you're on a mission with three of your other friends. You guys are freewheeling it through Call of Duty or something. Like, the way that that whole sequence was shot was phenomenal. And I think a lot of the cinematography and a lot of the setups and all of that kind of stuff, like the liberties, I guess, the director took with this film, like it, to me, it was just a beautifully shot film. There was never a point where I was like, I can't see what's going on, or it's too dark, or I don't understand what's happening in the scene. Like, everything played so well. I mean, it's one of the better sort of Netflix originals, if you will. Reminded me of Extraction, which was the last like Netflix original movie that I saw, the one with Chris Hemsworth, where he's sort of this like badass ex-military guy that goes in to rescue this kid in India.
I haven't had a chance to see that yet.
That one's really good too.
Netflix, I mean, their movies are not particularly great, most of them. They make better TV shows than they do seem to make movies. So,
yeah.
But Extraction looked like it could be quite good. They bought a few movies which are quite good as well. The come back to me actually. I forgot the name of it. The one in the space station that's connected with the other two films. I'll forget. But anyway, we'll come back to it. But no, it was, in terms of a Netflix original, I thought it was a really good movie. It actually had a high production value, good cast, well written. Like you say, you can understand everything that was going on.
Yeah.
It wasn't, I'm not sure what's going on. Yeah, the visuals were great.
Yeah.
Actually, how it was all set and everything. Some of the, you know, I think in the final moments, actually, when they're set in, actually in the city of London.
Mm-hmm.
I obviously from London, so it's great actually to see a big action film set in London. No, it's all done really well, and so with Andy, actually, I'm intrigued to know more about her.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So I could get behind sequels or even prequels really. Like, I would, yeah, I'm assuming that they're probably going to sequel this with movies, but I'd be behind a TV show on this because they could show more of these characters.
Yeah. And I really want to know more. Like you were saying, the woman who keeps drowning, Quinn, I would love to know more about her story. And spoiler again, but at the very end, after the movie is finished, there's a 6 month later title card.
And oh, yeah.
You see Quinn in Booker's apartment. And by the end of the movie, Booker kind of was a turncoat and eventually was the one that handed them all of the immortals over to Merrick. So he comes stumbling drunk into his apartment after he gets kicked out of the group for betraying them. And Quinn is there, and it's just kind of like, oh my God, what's going to happen? I want to know what's going to happen.
Well, because I kept mentioning about Quinn. And when they sort of all, at the end, after the Immortals have beaten Merrick's character, and they're sort of having a drink in the pub, which I thought this was quite cool. As you, before you go into the pub, on the outside of the pub, there's a sign about we've been serving customers for 500 years or we've been here 500 years. And I said to my wife, any money, they've been coming to this pub as regulars for 500 years. I bet you any money, obviously not every Friday, but they might go there every 20 years or something like that. And I thought that was pretty cool.
And especially because after they kicked after they kicked Booker out of the group, and Charlize is like, okay, well, I mean, you can't come with us and there has to be some kind of punishment. So we'll meet you back here in 100 years. That's kind of just do you guys own this pub? Is that what this is?
I felt quite bad for him on that. I know that he betrayed them, but I was 100 years, he's just going to become a wreck on his own for 100 years. Although that's clearly now not that's not going to happen. But in 6 months' time, he becomes a wreck. You see him stumbling in drunk into his apartment, and then you meet obviously Quinn, who's clearly there to cause some trouble of some kind. I'm intrigued. It was a good film. I really enjoyed it. It was a good comic book movie, and it was a good Netflix original. And they've done really well with it.
Yeah, I really loved Joe and Nikki, which is the couple that were fighting on opposing sides during the Crusades and then eventually came together. And Joe was played by Marwan Kenzari. He was Jafar in the live action Aladdin. And then Luca Marinelli plays Nikki. And it's just I don't know. They're so loving and intense. And it's just how is it that you guys could still be in love, this madly in love with each other when you've been traipsing around the world for the past, 400 or 500 years,
I didn't realize they were a couple until they got kidnapped. I'm pretty sure I didn't know that, until they got kidnapped.
Yeah.
And then, when they got kidnapped, the way they unleashed their love for each other, so descriptive. I was like, oh, wow.
Which almost was a word-for-word panel pull from the comics, which I thought was really interesting that they kept that in the movie. I loved the character dynamic in this film. Everyone seemed to work so well together. And even after Booker kind of betrayed everybody, it has to be one of those things where, I couldn't be as mad as I wanted to be, if this were a normal kind of shoot 'em up movie. But you kind of just feel if you people have been rolling around together for 500 years, there's got to be some kind of leeway or unspoken something where you'd be willing to forgive that kind of betrayal.
I think because his betrayal was, he had a motivation behind it, which didn't make him a bad guy. It wasn't for money or anything like that. He just wanted to die.
Yeah.
And he was hoping that this would lead to that. So you kind of didn't feel too bad for him once you knew why. But again, with all these things, he went about it the wrong way. His motivations were ones I could understand if you'd lived that long, that you might feel that you because it must be pretty sad to see, they must meet other humans and form bonds with them and keep seeing them getting older and dying, which I can remember that actually because I used to watch the Highlander TV series in the 90s, and that was something they sort of referenced then as well about falling in love with humans and seeing them die essentially. It must be, I can imagine if I was immortal, that must be terrible to get married, have children, and even see your children die. That must be.
I think that's probably why he took it so hard, because that's what he was explaining to Niall about, because she felt like, you know, she was still so young and she was never going to be able to see her family again. But he explained it like, I mean, you just don't have a choice, really, because if you tell them what you are, they're going to expect you to be able to help them if, or like that you could like transfer some of your gift or whatever to them. And then when you can't, they, you know, it kind of all falls apart. But he had said that he had 3 kids. So I can imagine for him, it would have to be the hardest, because if he's the only one in the group that had kids, then to have to watch all 3 of your kids live their lives and then die, and that there's nothing you could do about it, that's got to be devastating. And then to just kind of carry that guilt around with you for centuries.
Yeah, and I think so. What you're saying, obviously, about Kiki Layne's character, Niall, that was a common thing that they do in terms of an introduction to a new character as a mm-hmm. way of explaining to the audience again the background to their characters and their, I guess, their abilities and their limitations on these abilities, because they've had other humans in the past say, you know, we want some of that.
Like, yeah.
And so she was a good gateway for us in terms of learning their background. So.
Yeah. And I want to know, like, I want to know what the secret is. Like, how is there only a certain number of immortals that can be on Earth at one time? Like, why is it that Niall came around and suddenly Charlize is not quite as immortal as she used to be? Like, what, how does that work? So if there are any sequels, I would love for them to kind of explore that a little bit more to see, like, how are these people chosen? I mean, what makes them special?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot more about this film. I'm sorry about this whole, the background of them. I guess the mythology is probably the right word for this. There's a lot more to it. So it's a big question is, are we patient and we wait for a sequel, or do we go and read those comic books and maybe find the answer before the film comes out? So
yeah, sometimes I think it might have to be the comic route this time.
Two thumbs up. I enjoyed this film. It was great.
And of course, definitely. Like, I can't say enough good things about Charlize Theron. She is the epitome of like badass. And I love her to pieces. I love her in everything.
I've not seen a bad Charlize film. Yes, I've seen them. I've not seen every film she's in, but I've seen most films.
Yeah.
And you can't ever be disappointed with her, any performance she gives.
Yeah.
Whether it's an action film or a drama, she's in most action films, but most of the stuff she does is action films. But I would well rate her. And I did think Kiki Layne for a newcomer was actually very strong.
Yeah, definitely. I would love to see more from her, especially in this role. And the fact that she could kind of hold her own in the stunt choreography with Charlize Theron, that to me, that kind of says a lot. Like, because Charlize's been in this business for 20 years at least. So for her to come on and just hold the screen with Charlize without totally getting eaten up, that's pretty exciting for a young new talent. So I'm excited to see what else she can do.
Charlize certainly ages well, doesn't she?
Yeah. Yes, she does.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll wrap that up there for the old guard. I'd basically summarize this by just saying, watch it. It's a good film.
Yeah, definitely. It is definitely worth. It's kind of long. It's just over 2 hours, but it is 2 hours well spent. It's highly entertaining.
Yeah, I'd definitely watch it. All right. Well, we'll move on to the last part of our show where we recommend something to each other and yourselves. So I'll go first. This week's recommendation from me is a fairly short one. It's this week's Fantastic Four: Empire Zero, which, if you listened to our show a couple of weeks ago, we reviewed Avengers Empire Zero and the prequel issue for the main series, which actually comes out next week. So the Fantastic Four Empire is written by Dan Slott, who writes the main ongoing Fantastic Four series, which I've not read any of. However, this would make me want to read his book, Fantastic Four, and find out a little bit more about it. It's illustrated by R.B. Silver and Sean, I'm going to struggle here, Isaacsi or something. Anyway, the artwork is amazing. Definitely think it's incredible. The actual attention to detail in some of the scenes is fantastic. This actually was a really well-illustrated book. Story-wise, it's kind of a one and done. You don't need to have read any of the Fantastic Four before you pick this up. You don't need to have read any. In fact, you don't even need to have read those Empire books that we read the other week. It's actually quite a nice on its own story. It does obviously continue into the main Empire book coming out next week. But I quite liked it. If you think about it traditionally, they're on a spaceship, the Fantastic Four, with Reed and Sue, their two children, who are, I want to say they're like pre-teens, maybe like somewhere between 10 and 13, a boy and a girl. And so their ship essentially runs out of gas in space. So they hail a lift to, oh, I can't remember now, like another planet or something. And this did feel very Star Wars. Like, they land their ship in some sort of bay where there's loads of other ships and people coming and going. They get sort of conned into the thing having to go and do like a wrestling boxing fight where he can win prize money, which will pay for the fuel and the parts they need for their ship. So the family tell the two kids to stay at the ship, which undoubtedly is a bad idea. So the two kids get it in their heads that they can save the family to get the petrol. So they decide to sell the ship for credits so they can then go to the casino to try and win back more money to buy the ship back, plus the gas.
This sounds like hijinks.
Like, and at the same time, all this stuff's going on with the thing and the Human Torch mainly trying to be in this brawl, whilst Reed Richards, obviously, is the clever one of the team, keeps overhearing bits and pieces about the Skrulls and the Kree that we discussed last time, about how their rivalries come to an end and now they're friends, mm-hmm. which is very unusual because they've been warring for thousands of years. And all this stuff kind of gets resolved in a nice little bow before they get back on their ship. But yeah, it's a great little story. And you can just literally pick it up on its own and it'd be enjoyable without having to worry about any of the other stuff. And then it obviously leads into the Empire series, which is coming out next week. But yeah, that's actually really enjoyed it. And I in regards to Dan Slott, I've enjoyed his Spider-Man run. I read most of that. But I didn't like anything else that Dan Slott's written. You know, honestly, I'm not really. I read his Mighty Avengers, didn't like that. I tried his She-Hulk, didn't like that. When he went on to Spider-Man, God, 10 years ago now, I was like, oh, no. But actually, he did a really good job on Spider-Man. I was actually really chuffed. But I tried, because when he came on Spider-Man, went on to Iron Man and Fantastic Four. I tried the first issue of Iron Man. I thought it was terrible. So I didn't even bother to pick up Fantastic Four. I thought, oh no, forget it. I thought maybe Dan Slott's like a one-hit wonder, write Spider-Man and that's it. But actually his Fantastic Four was really good. I am considering picking up some Fantastic Four back issues off the back of this. So anyway, wow,
that's a pretty good endorsement.
Yeah. So that's my recommendation for this week.
My recommendation is a lot less solid this week, but I would recommend go watch more female directors. Gina Prince-Bythewood did an awesome job with Old Guard. Give her more money so that she can do the sequel. Go watch old Patty Jenkins movies. If you don't want to watch Wonder Woman, go all the way back to Monster from 2003, which also starred Charlize Theron, which also won Charlize her first Best Actress Oscar. Lexi Alexander, she did Punisher Warzone, which was great. She's a former kickboxing champion. She's also directed a bunch of TV shows, including stuff like Arrow and Supergirl.
I'll tell you what, I've not watched that Punisher Warzone.
The action in that movie is so good. To me, it's so much better than the John Travolta movie, the John Travolta Thomas Jane movie. That movie was terrible, but the Punisher Warzone follow-up movie stars Ray Stevenson as Punisher instead of Thomas Jane.
I think, and I also don't like John Travolta in pretty much anything.
Oh. So. But anyway, okay, Lexi Alexander is so good. Or if you think that female directors can't do military movies, go back and rewatch The Hurt Locker, which won Kathryn Bigelow her first Best Director Oscar, also first woman to win Best Director for The Hurt Locker. So Yes, go and watch women directors doing badass things. That's my recommendation for this week.
I'll tell you what, I've not watched The Hurt Locker either. It's on my list of things to watch. I'll try and get through The Hurt Locker or Punisher Warzone before next week. I will let you know my thoughts. I'll try and watch one of them. But no, I didn't actually realize that either of those were by female directors. So that's pretty amazing.
Catherine Bigelow also directed Point Break, which is one of my favorite movies of all time.
The original?
Yes. Keanu and Patrick Swayze.
I love that film. That's got to be one of my favorite films. Yeah. That's a really good film. That's fantastic film. I didn't know that either. So, yeah. That film I don't need to go and watch. I've probably watched that 20 times.
Yeah, we've all seen that one a million and a half times.
I did watch the remake, I have to say.
I haven't seen that one.
I wanted to know. It was okay. It was all right. It was good. You know, it was an all right action film. It didn't need remaking.
So, no, not at all. You know, the whole Point Break thing is one of my favorite gags about Hot Fuzz. I love the Hot Fuzz movie.
I can't.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I love the Hot Fuzz movie, but I can't remember the gag.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's... So Nick Frost, like his character, Point Break is his favorite movie. And of course, Simon Pegg has never seen it. So he keeps like making all these Point Break references throughout their shenanigans. And Simon Pegg just doesn't understand them. So finally he makes him watch it. And then in the very last like big battle sequence, he does a thing where he like rolls on his back and then shoots the gun up in the air. Oh my God. Just like right out of Point Break. Anyway.
I might have to rewatch Hot Fuzz. I'm completely forgotten. Yeah, no, Hot Fuzz was great. Well, all the Simon Pegg films were great.
Yeah.
They're his little weird trilogy of comedy action films are great. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, you can also follow us on social media. We are on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, all as Geeks Unleashed. So give us a shout out, a retweet, or you know, send us a little message. We'd be good to hear from you. And
give us a listen. We're on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Podbean. Leave us a comment, give us a thumbs up, give us a 5-star rating, or just come talk to us. We'd love to know what you think about any of the stuff we've talked about this week.
Yeah, thank you very much. Do you know what, actually, you know, you said give us a 5-star review. That's just reminded me of, there's this YouTuber on YouTube called Max No Sleeves. He always ends his episode with, if you liked it, give me a like. If you didn't like it, give me a like. You know, so if you like us, give us a like. If you don't like us, give us a like. So, anyway, thank you very much. This is Geeks Unleashed. Have a good week.
See you next week.